We apologize for this brief interruption in the show. As many of you likely know, the Higher Standard Podcast is officially sponsored by Transcend Company. Transcend has been my longtime provider for both testosterone and peptide therapies. But they offer so much more. Whether you're interested in health, wellness, or longevity, it all begins with you getting your blood work done. A lab draw will help you get the numbers and establish your baseline. You can go to transcendcompany.com/THSP. That's transcendcompany.com/THSP. Or you can click the link in the show notes on any streaming platform and on YouTube. Fill out your information and one of the representatives will contact you to get your journey started today. Now back to the show. It wouldn't be a show without having to be afraid whether or not Arun has actually hit the record button.
Three red lights.
We got three.
Look at you. You got all fancy today. You and I both.
I've actually worn the Spider-Man J1s to the gym. It's in complete total disrespect. Like, I'm at the point now where guys are wearing, like, I'm seeing them wear Travis Scott's to the gym, and I'm like, okay, let's go one up.
That's very sassy of you.
Yeah. It's full destruction mode. Full destruction. It's self-loathing at this
point. As the kids say, you're flexing on these cats.
It's not that I'm flexing. It's just I have so many damn shoes, I need to start getting rid of them.
Gotcha.
So I'm just going to wear them down.
What size are you?
Not your size.
Damn.
Yeah.
He's a size 7, Kendrick Lamar. All right, let's go. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We got a special segment for everybody today. We're actually trying something new. We got a longtime listener of the podcast. His name is Vacha. Hopefully I pronounced that properly. And we wanted to bring him on because Chris and I routinely get a lot of questions that we wish that we could, you know, spend more time answering. But what we're seeing is a common theme with some of these questions. So we're trying out a new segment where we're bringing on listeners to the show. If you have a good question, please send it in, and maybe we'll do this with you, too. So let's welcome Vacha to the show.
That was awkward for me, too, Vacha. Don't worry about it. You good.
It's okay. I live in awkwardness. It's all right.
Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. First, I guess, listener on the show, so no pressure. But
Don't fumble this.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it, so...
If you turn into this episode and you wind up hearing like a completely different intro, it's not that we cut you. Mm-hmm. It's just that we felt that there was a conscious separation.
Arun fucked up.
Yeah, Arun probably fucked up.
Yeah. That's how we label those things.
Yeah. So by way of backstory, was it me that you hit up? It was me, right? You hit up me in the DMs?
Yeah. Yes, he likes you more. He's team Chris.
Just to be clear, God. The one with the more profound social presence. And you asked a really astute question as it relates to kind of investing. And I thought, you know what? This is one of those questions that we get a lot, but it's so subjective that it might be good to let's have the conversation. So, number one, thank you for sharing. I know it's not easy to be on a show like this talking to two morons, especially late at night on your birthday. Happy birthday,
buddy. Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, hit me with the question. Give it to me. And I'm going to ask you a whole bunch of questions afterwards.
Let's get into a little backstory first.
Sure. Again, my name is Vacha. I'm actually a licensed clinical PA, and I have been for the last 3 years or so. So I'm in the healthcare sector, I guess, if you want to call it that. And then I'm also married. My wife is a veterinarian. She works in the ER. So
wow.
We're both in a mountain of student debt, as I'm sure you guys can probably tell. Mm. as far as, you know, anything else as far as financial background, I'm really would not consider myself financially, like, you know, savvy. I would say I'm still kind of on the bottom level, which might be more than what most of the population can really say as far as their, you know, financial literacy, if you want to call it that. So I didn't really get into it until I was like in my late 20s, even early 30s, just because I was in school for so long and I didn't really have a legit career and job until as of 3 years ago. So that's when the ball really kind of started rolling and I started thinking about these things. Hence why, you know, I sent you a DM and kind of want to expand on it. And hence why I've been listening to you guys for the last few months. I want to say I started listening to you guys before the holidays.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that was before or after that super viral clip of, you know, Saeed that went around.
Why do you don't that, like... that is not the reference point people should be using.
Oh, so
but it works.
So yeah,
I'm sure it works.
So it was me.
Yeah, the super viral site.
The super viral moment. Well, listen, you're definitely not bottom tier of financial literacy. I mean, you're listening to this show. So definitely at least middle of the pack, guaranteed access.
You're better than any Dave Ramsey listener right off the top.
Yeah, right off the top.
But so it's interesting, the background, and I hear this a lot. So a lot of working professionals will go to school and they're so hyper-focused on finishing school. And then you get into this student loan system and you get a Stafford loan or whatever it is you might get. And you just get so focused on the future career that nobody stops to really focus on like the money aspect. And to most people's defense, there isn't a lot of money at that point in time anyway. It's really when you get into your career and you start making money. So you're certainly not alone. If anything, you're on the best possible path forward. I know it doesn't feel that way with all the student loan debt. I had over $100,000 when I graduated, I think law school, and I took on more later on, here and there, little bits and pieces. And it took me a long time to pay it all off. So I went through the same learning curve that you did. I think that the only difference between my career and yours is that it was in finance, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the concern now? I mean, you're making money. I assume your wife's doing pretty well. I mean, that's a pretty good gig that she's got going on there too.
Dual income household. That's unlocking a lot right there.
No, it's been great. I mean, we've been married for a little over 2 years now, so no kids yet, one on the way, so we're still a few months away from, you know, parenthood.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So I know you guys are all dads, so
That's funny because I son you all the time. It's funny how this works out.
That's not
okay.
Stay focused.
Yeah.
Metaphorically.
Yeah.
We make, you know, we're blessed in the sense that we make a healthy living between the two of us. And I think it's just, quite frankly, I just don't want to mess this up and, you know, do it in a way where I don't really take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. A lot of things have gone our way. Obviously we, you know, busted our butts and went to school and did that thing. And, you know, we got our careers up and running for the last couple of years. Chris, I know I mentioned a couple of things in the DM to you. I was fortunate to be one of those people to get a home, you know, back when rates were really low.
Yep.
With our starter home, which is, you know, a little condo at, you know, sub 3% loan, which again is probably the best thing I'll ever do or, you know, have ever done up until now. But really my main concern is the future and what to do from here. And, you know, I did mention too that my personal short-term goal in the next, you know, 2 to 5 years or so is to get another additional property, mm-hmm. On the side. So me and my wife are currently saving for our next home within the next year and a half. You know, the market's up and down. I listen to you guys all the time, which does kind of influence how seriously I look at the market or not, as far as potentially moving into a bigger home. But, you know, aside from that goal with my wife, I also have my own goal of, I'd like to get a small property in the future just to kind of help establish that foundation for the future for us. So my question to you was really, how do you even start the process? How do you start looking at properties? How do you make a budget for yourself? How do you look, you know, what you can afford, what you can afford to rent it out for? Mm. And I know we can backtrack and dissect it a little bit more, but that was the gist of what I had DM'd you.
No, it's fantastic. So. And it's such a great question because I think that, most people want to assume that they know the answer to it. And social media certainly makes it seem like it's very easy, and it's not. And when you start, for those people who've actually gotten into the position where this is a real thing, they start to think through what that actually means, the implications. And then they're like, wait a minute, I don't understand what I thought I understood when I thought I wanted to do this. So it's an astute observation. There's two classic paths that people will typically go on when they buy a property, right? Path number one is going to typically be, you're in your current property. It's a starter home, as you coined it. When you buy the next home, can you rent this current home out? So can you save enough money to buy your next home and rent this property out? And you automatically get rental property number one. For a lot of people, that's just not feasible because the main source of net worth that most people will build over their lifetime will be in their home. And given when you bought to now, there's actually been a pretty palpable appreciation in home values. In most states, and you know, unless some random ass outliers like San Francisco, Austin.
Exactly.
That being said, there is the alternative, option number two, where you look to buy an investment property somewhere else. That's a lot more pragmatic and thoughtful of a process than just renting out your current property and kind of scaling up from there. I will point out that if you are buying a new property and not selling your old one, it's generally a whole hell of a lot easier to get the financing situation worked out, because lenders are generally more comfortable with the idea that, oh, okay, you're buying a bigger property, you guys have gotten some success, and you're going to rent out your old property. For some reason, lenders are just more comfortable with that story.
Right.
And it's just not, they're like, okay, you know what? He's managed this mortgage payment for a while. We're just adding the new mortgage payment. Can he cash flow it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, where things get tricky and you have to be thoughtful about this is, if you plan on buying a new home and keeping this one and buying another rental property in the future, now you got to be able to cash flow all three mortgages.
Right. And that's something that I wanted to get into right away. So kudos to you for making the right first step, for not buying too big of a property early on. Right. Because this is something that this is actually a mistake that I made. I bought too big of a home that my next home, I wasn't able to, you know, be able to afford both loans, which I wish I could have. Right. I was thinking down the road, growing my family into it. And I planned at the time staying in there long term. In hindsight, I wish I would have maybe bought a smaller property to where I could have now, like Chris said, mentioned it, kept it, and moved into a bigger property.
I would be a terrible human being if I didn't point out that this is clear and convincing evidence that Saeed has a much bigger home than me. Okay.
No, but so good job. Good job on your part for doing that, because now you allow yourself the flexibility to where that might still be an option for you. I think the next step you really have to ask yourself is what Chris said is looking to maybe buy investment property somewhere else. Right. And now there's a rule of thumb. Chris mentioned on a previous episode, he knows people close to him that they have rules of thumb where they typically don't like to buy investment properties that are more than 45 minutes away, because they like to be able to get right to them. Can you get yourself comfortable enough to where, you know, you can vet out a property management company that you can trust? You're definitely going to have to go make a visit or two, right?
Well, where do you live? Let's start there.
Yeah.
I'm Southern California. I'm not far from you guys. I'm up in Diamond Bar area.
Oh, bro, you should have just came to the damn studio.
Yeah, you could have came
doing
to the studio, exactly.
We could have had some cocktails and dreams.
His wife is pregnant.
Your wife is pregnant. Right. You're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, what is that? Right. Was that a Moscow mule, Kentucky mule? What you got there?
It's a tequila mule. So okay. We call it donkey. So.
Okay, there you go.
Oh,
I can
so
tell
many jokes.
By the cup. So many jokes.
Pace yourself, Chris. All right, it's early. All right, so... So tell me what your plan path is. Are you planning on buying a bigger home and currently renting this one out? Are you planning on getting an investment property? Like, what's your path of choice?
Yeah. So, I mean, our primary goal is, you know, to move into a slightly bigger home in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months, whatever it shakes out to, which we've been able to kind of save up for, which is the nice part about having a smaller, cheaper home in this time. We were able to set aside a good chunk of change in the 2.5 years that we've owned it to hopefully make that a reality pretty soon. So that's our primary focus, number one, right now. And again, it's another one of those situations where we don't want to overstretch our means and get into something huge and a mountain of debt where it like quadruples what our current mortgage is. And, you know, we like the idea that the mortgage isn't so expensive to us right now, so we want to keep it within reason, you know. But yeah, you know, my personal, you know, full disclosure, I am a little irresponsible with money here and there with cars. So I mean, that's my biggest thing.
Hey,
so a while ago,
me too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a curse, really. But you know, me personally, like a little while ago, I started putting aside a huge nest egg for, you know, a future thing to treat myself to. But the larger and larger that nest egg is getting, I'm like, you know what? I would be really dumb to get a car with this in the future. I think I'd want to pivot it and maybe use it for, you know, investment or an investment property when the time comes, or when it gets to the point that I want it to get to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when these thoughts started turning. I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. You know, I don't know what zip codes to look at. I don't know if I, you know, absolutely want to keep it in state or out of state, or what my realistic budget will be, how much to charge rent, how much, you know, a property manager would be. That's when these things started rolling in my head. And hence why, you know, I started listening to you guys every week and kind of brainstorming a little bit more. So
let's bang out some of these real quick. Let's knock out some of the idiosyncrasies here. I think this is really valuable. Number one, if you're going to buy a bigger home, you need to be able to cash flow both that one and your current property if you're going to keep your current property and rent it out. So being as how you got such a low mortgage rate, it would be really difficult for me from a financial perspective to justify you giving that up unless you have to. And it also means that your mortgage payment's low in this current house. Mm-hmm. So you'll probably be able to rent that property out and cash flow something. So how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, how many square feet is your current?
Two bedroom, two bath. It's about 1,100 square feet.
1,100 square feet. So what do you think? If you were to guess market rent in your area for a property like that, what do you think? 2,500, 2,700, 3,000?
Yeah. I mean, on the low end, it's like 2,500. And then on the high end for a really nice property, it's about 3,000, which we put in a lot of work when we moved in. So we, you know, invested a lot into making it nice and modern and have creature comforts and everything. So
nice.
I would hope that we would be able to get higher end for it when the time comes.
Okay. So, and then what is your current mortgage payment?
With property tax, HOA, everything thrown in, it's about 2,400.
Okay. So there you go. $600 a month, you know, $500 to $600 a month in free cash flow. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, if you have a property manager for the property, which I think your first property is actually a valuable experience not to, especially if you live in the area, you know, you're close enough to where you can handle it. If you get a good enough tenant and you go through the experience of renting it out on your own, number one, you'll understand what you want from a property manager. Number two, you'll understand kind of the subtle balance in how you manage that. Some people don't want to do that because they don't want to be too close in proximity to their tenant. So the tenant just feels like they can call them all the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've never had that experience personally, but I can relate to those who have. I think it'd be a good experience for you to rent your property out. I know it'd be a bit of a time suck the first year, but you'll understand what it is that you do. Now, as you grow and scale your portfolio, 3 to 5% is normal in commercial real estate. I've seen property managers in the single family world charge as little as $100 or $150 per door or per home that they manage a month. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I think in Southern California, it's better to pay a little bit more than that. 3%, for example, I think of your aggregate rent. It might sound like a lot off the top, but keep in mind a good property manager handles everything. You're just going to get a check and pay your mortgage and your HOA and everything else. So, but right off the top, you're going to cash flow $400 or $500 a month if you rent that out. But you got to walk through the logistics here because you got a family and you got to think about that first. So step number one is before you look at buying an investment property, get into your next home. And the reason why is the lender is going to look at it and say, okay, do they have the cash flow to support the debt service, the payments on the old property and the new property? Because when you get to that point, you're not going to have rented out your current property yet. That's going to come in the future. Then what you're going to do is you're going to sit in that new property, the one you just bought. You're going to pay the mortgage on that one, and you're going to rent this one out. And then when you file your next tax return, you're going to show evidence that this property is rented out on your next tax return. So if you buy your next property, call it in June or July of this year, or maybe even November or December of this year, or next year, you'll have that on your tax return, at least in some way, shape, or form. You'll show a little bit of history on your tax return. And your lender, depending on their underwriting standards, will say, okay, you know what? Vashi's got this property rented out. He only shows a little bit of income last year, but he's got it rented out. I know it's rented out. We'll give him credit for the cash flow. They won't ding you for paying the mortgage because they know that you've got somebody in there who's going to cover it.
And that's really going to depend on which lender you go to. You know, if you go to some of these big box banks, they look at things one certain way. And that's it. If you don't fit within their box, they don't look at it. You go to maybe a regional bank, a community bank, you know, and they understand your entire relationship. This is something that Chris is talking about. They might give you a little bit of leeway, but they will need to see some evidence. So like me, myself, an underwriter, if I were to see this, I could clearly tell, you know, the mission, the path that you're on, and you've now rented it out, even let's call it 4, 5, 6 months, right? Even though it hasn't been a full 12 months, that is something that I would probably like lean towards and give you credit for.
Yeah, I mean, who do you currently have your bank accounts with?
For our mortgage?
Just your normal checking, savings, all that stuff.
Only Chase.
Only Chase, the enemy. Yeah. That's fine. Not hurtful at all.
No, they're not the enemy, dude. That's Uncle Jamie.
I know, Jamie's just kind of a dick lately. but all right, let's forego the obvious insult. And then who's your mortgage through when you got on your current property?
Right now it's through Mr. Cooper.
So did you go through a mortgage broker when you got it then?
We did. Initially, it was through Rocket Mortgage, but then within like 3 months, it got moved over to Mr. Cooper.
Yeah, very common. Rocket Mortgage will sell to the secondary market, typically Mr. Cooper. Mr. Cooper's a business we do a lot of business with, so I know they're another enterprise well. They actually bought one of my loans as well. So
yeah.
Look, we're mortgage bros. So yeah, I think definitely if you're gonna go down that path, buy the next home first so that you have a clear path with no income restraints on you. Once you're seasoned, you'll have these two properties. You'll have this one rented out. You'll have some experience doing it, or you'll find a property manager. The question then becomes that nest egg that you have, how much is in it, if you don't mind me asking?
Right now, not a lot. It's only about like 14 grand right now. But this goal that I have is like 2 to 4 or 5 years down the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No,
14 grand is great, man. That's nothing to bat an eye at, but definitely something that... you can continue to grow and build into.
So I would routinely, when I was buying properties at a single family residences at a much greater cadence, what I would do is I would save between $30,000 and $50,000, and I would buy a property in the Midwest valued at the time somewhere between 175 to call it 200 grand. And that's what I would put down. And that was in a different interest rate environment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously mortgage payments were different. And those would cash flow somewhere between $400 to $800 a month, depending on what they were, if there was an HOA and stuff like that.
Right.
Right. You can do this up to 10 times on your personal credit report, assuming you have the cash flow historically to justify it. People go, oh my God, I need to pay 10 mortgage payments. Yeah, but if you do this over time, you buy one property a year, you rent it out that year, then it shows up on your tax return the next year. You have the income from that renting that property out to offset the mortgage payment. So you are making more in addition to your current salary and other sources of income to offset it. So it's not as burdensome as it sounds.
Right.
If you do it slowly. That's why you'll routinely see me criticize people on social media and say, there's no fucking way this guy could have 30 properties at his age. And it's because this. It's because that underwriting concept that they miss. I know unequivocally that you can't load the books with a ton of real estate debt without a giant source of income.
Yes.
Arun, are you running out of time on the sign-in? Didn't pay for that upgrade, bro. It's my account. If it cuts you off, we'll rope you back in. But we'll just join the call and just start the call again, Arun, if it worst case scenario that cuts you off. But so when it comes to buying the real estate stuff, you want to make sure you focus in on that kind of trajectory. Now, if you're going to look to buy in Southern California, you're going to need a lot more money than $40,000 or $50,000 to put down.
Right. Yeah.
You can get into projects, but look, you got a full career. Your wife's got a full career. You got a baby on the way. You don't want to deal with a fixer.
Right.
You don't want to deal with creative finance, and you don't want to deal with rehabbing a property.
Right. Or getting a hard money loan,
which is really sensationalized on social media. You want to buy turnkey stabilized properties that you can put a tenant into and not have to worry about it.
Right.
I guess I also had a question. We should have also started off with. When thinking about having an investment property like the one you want to rent out, the one that you're currently living in, is the goal to provide you extra cash flow every month, or to buy a property and have it grow and appreciate in value because you just like real estate as an asset?
I guess the goal was to just be like, eventually it's going to be a paid off property and it'll be X amount of dollars in 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And just kind of treat it like another retirement account. Mm-hmm. So that was really the goal. I know a lot of people say that condos don't appreciate as much as a house, and that was never really the goal to magically. I would be really shocked if this ever becomes a $1 million condo. I really hope it doesn't. But
you'd be surprised.
I guess short answer
for the sake of society. Yeah, what a good guy this guy is.
Mine is almost $1 million.
Let the record show that our listeners are the best listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I learned from you guys.
So. Yeah, that's true. And look, shelter is a problem at the moment, and it's going to affect inflation. As a matter of fact, there is a growing rhetoric of people in the finance space saying, okay, can we ever hit a 2% target inflation again? Because shelter is just leading the way. I mean, excluding insurance, it's largely shelter.
I got data on that for tonight's show, too, but up 4.8% year over year.
I know. It's a son of a bitch. It's a problem. But I recognize that this stuff sounds scary, but when it comes down to looking out of state, if that's something that you really want to do, do you have friends and family in other states, or have you been to another state that you like?
Truthfully, aside from, Vegas, not really.
Vegas is an interesting market. I mean, do you feel comfortable investing in Vegas market?
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough to where I feel like it's, you know, if I had to make a trip out there, it's not a big deal, and it's Vegas, so, you know, there's always something to do, and a lot of people are going out there anyways, so.
Right, definitely feels like the market's growing out there, right?
It is a little saturated in some ways because there's a lot of people in that space because generally the properties are a bit cheaper. Now, I will say they've gotten more expensive in the recent, like, decade.
Absolutely.
But you've got a lot of people developing in and around the Las Vegas market because it's a tax shelter for a lot of people leaving in the exodus of California. I mean, you got Nevada, Florida, and Texas are probably the primary exports.
Exactly, right? And you do also benefit it being away from California because, you know, or somewhere like Florida where you got these insurance costs that we've talked about. I'm currently underwriting loans right now where I have to project out and increase my cash flow by 30% on someone's property insurance premium. So, I mean, in order for these loans and these properties to cash flow, they're having to come in 50% down payment just to cash flow a property.
Yeah.
Right? Which is a lot. We're talking about just 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, you're looking at coming in with 30%.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sometimes even less. So, Nevada, you would benefit off that where you probably wouldn't have the huge spike in insurance premium because you're away from the states that have natural disasters.
Yeah, plus you got a couple of years. You can research the market. And by research the market, I don't mean going to clubs. I don't mean that. I legitimately mean research the market. Get to know it. I know a lot of people in that space, in that area, and I can tell you that there are places that are higher end than other areas. Now, I will tell you, desert people can be a little challenging. Mm-hmm. No different than people in Oklahoma. It's a different subculture, so you have to understand the culture that you're renting to and things in that area. Now, I do favor the Midwest in this regard because the Midwest doesn't typically build vertical. Whereas you don't get as many apartment buildings in a place that's got so much land. You do get a lot more vertical stuff in Las Vegas now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of my only hesitation there. I also don't think I think it's got downside potential. I think everybody's got downside potential at this point in time. But 2 years from now might be a different perspective. So what I would tell you based on this conversation, number one, buy the new home first. Number two, keep growing the nest egg. And number three, when it's time to invest, know the market. Know the market well and find some place that you're comfortable in. You'd be surprised what opportunities may come up between now and then to look into, to invest in, to buy something new. But if you can keep this property and get into another property, you're already so far ahead of the curve at a young age. And I know it doesn't feel that way because, you know, a lot of education can make you feel old sometimes because you've been doing this for so long. You feel like you're behind the curve. But you're very young. You're very young. And both you and your wife, you know?
Absolutely. And a couple of things that I'll look into that you could easily, you know, look up the data on some of this stuff is unemployment rates in an area, the proximity to schools and hospitals, something that I intend on doing down the road. And I know Chris currently does right now for the properties that he invests in the Midwest is I'm trying to invest in a property where the tenant will ultimately be, you know, some kind of a family that hopefully I can get them and keep them happy and they'll stay long term. I don't have to worry about getting a new tenant every year, every time their lease is up, right?
You know, I generally don't look at that.
I know you don't look at that. Maybe it's hard to aim for, right? But you don't look for good neighborhoods like where you're close proximity to like a good school.
Yeah, I always do that. Yeah. I do look for close proximity to schools. School proximity is a big thing on my radar.
Yeah.
Ironically, the last guy I rented a property to owned a donut shop and he was retired, older Asian guy and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Used to bring my property manager donuts every week. No kids. Paid the full year in advance. It was a very strange dude. Amazing tenant.
Wow.
Very strange
full
dude.
Full year in advance. Take that all day.
I got one right now that's vacating and the tiles are completely like to shit. I'm going to replace everything. But there's obvious termite damage.
Mm.
And I need a new roof. So that's going to be like an $8,000 repair.
Yeah. So, these are things that that's something else that maybe you can help them think about too is, you know, what kind of reserve system would you set up for an investment property too? So he's coming out of money on down payment on a house, definitely some stuff he's going to have to fix up, right? So what kind of reserve, how much of a reserve do you keep typically for each property?
That's pretty easy. So no less than $2,500, but my new reserve perspective has changed a little bit with inflation and some of the stuff that's growing in costs. What I've typically done is 2 months of their rent, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're paying, you know, $2,800, $3,000 a month, I'll keep 2 months of that in the account. So I'm not netting out more. I mean, I'm keeping $6,000 in the account. So basically, I'm paying the mortgage for, call it 4 months or so, mm-hmm. and then whatever savings I have left, I'm gonna pop in there. I usually fund the reserve on day one with about $2,500 myself.
Right. And if you listen to today's episode, where if you ultimately try to hold this property in an LLC, right, and then you keep that reserve account under the LLC bank account, that's just further evidence that you're now truly handling this property as an investment property.
Yeah, but I will say when you're buying single-family residences the way you want to right now and you're in this aspect in the beginning stages,
yeah.
you can't put it into an LLC.
Yeah, you can't, exactly.
The best you can do to insulate your family from risk is to put it into the name of a trust. So, and I do recommend when you're having a child soon, that should be one on your radar of something that you should need to do is create a trust.
Right.
Yeah. And if I may, I even go so far as to also say that, look, when my son was born on day one, literally from the hospital, I transferred into his account, I think it was $10,000, into his low-cost index fund account.
Yeah.
The day he was born. And I know that I'm in a unique position, that I'm different, that I have the ability to do that. I also bought a car from the hospital. It was a very weird hospital stay. I bought a car and transferred. This is fucking embarrassing. Jesus. Into his account on day one. If you got $14,000, if it were me, I'd tell you to take at least $4,000 of that and just dump it into a savings fund for your future child.
Right.
Okay. You know, not savings, but an investment fund. And it's probably going to cut you off right now. Arun will cut you back in. We'll cut you back into the show. So nobody's going to even know you were gone.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
And we'll make a couple of jokes about your looks while you're gone. Don't worry about us.
That's all right. Yeah. My wife does that anyways.
Like your wife already.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to think about starting your journey and how the rules are different when you get started, even though you're still buying real estate, versus when you buy real estate, when it's more complex and the rules change so dynamically for commercial real estate.
Right.
You can hold it into an LLC, but you can't get 30-year amortization.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy something in more of investable areas, and it's more hypothetical and, you know, pro forma on upside versus when you buy a single family. If you're not buying stabilized, you're getting really crazy financing. It's not what I would call ideal. And he's back.
You can hear me, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right.
And we can see Arun on the camera, which makes my life so much better.
This is how we need to operate moving forward.
Yeah.
No.
Come on, sweet cheeks. You look great with your glasses on tonight, too. He's even wearing a hoodie, which is more than he normally wears.
He's usually topless.
Yeah. I got a donkey, bocce, and a topless guy.
Bacha.
Bocce. Bocce. Bacha.
Bacha. Come on, man.
Bacha. Yeah.
Put some respect on it.
Just because there's an E at the end doesn't mean you have to emphasize it, Chris.
Criticizing myself.
Right.
Well, look. I know that it's not easy to come on the show and talk about this kind of stuff, and we certainly appreciate you doing it. But I did want to extend like an extra offer. Stay in contact. I'm nobody important or you know, social media is such a weird thing. I try to respond to everybody. I'm a little bit slow, but stay you know, in touch, and we will help you out along the way. Any questions you might have, like, we will help you out. We don't ask for anything in return. To the extent that you and your family can grow is really all we want. That's the whole reason we started the show.
Yeah. If you find a property that you do like, you know, and you're having trouble sizing it or making sense of it to see how much it cash flows, you know, you and I, you can ping me as well, and we can go through the numbers, and I can give you, like, a ballpark to show you, like, how I even begin to look at some of these things.
Yeah.
Because this is what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you. No, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
but yeah, for sure.
I think that what you're doing is smart. I wish that I hope that someday when my kids are old enough to be thinking like this, that they're trying to plan for their future the same exact way.
And I will leave you with one last thing, my friend.
Sure.
Don't be so hard on yourself. You're in a much better potential situation than most people. And
yeah.
The fact that you are cognizant of that you want to know more from a financial literacy perspective already means you actually have a better natural skill set towards this than most people do. Most people you run across don't really recognize what they don't know. That bell curve is a very dangerous thing. So I think you're perfectly situated. You're very young. You got a growing family. It's easy to jump into the temptation. Let me tell you one last mistake that I made. I started building a ridiculous project car way too soon. And I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on it. And I felt committed to the project. And I was just like, fuck, I got to finish it. I'm financially invested. Looking back on it, I regret doing that so young. I wish I would have waited until I was in my early 40s to do all that. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I was still passionate about cars. I still loved all that stuff. And I still, made, you know, saved a lot of money along the way. But buying a property is always going to be stressful. Having that extra money, that extra stuff on the side, and foregoing a little bit of those guilty pleasures a little bit longer will actually make it a little bit less stressful.
Right. Staying disciplined, committed to the long-term goal, right? I think I haven't gone down this path yet, but now I purchased two homes. You know, I'm sure after you bought your condo, it was an extremely stressful situation. It doesn't get any easier anytime soon. And there's always going to be a sweat, right? And I think that just accepting the fact that there's going to be mistakes along the way and that you're going to deal with them as long as you're, you know, pragmatic and you're careful and you make sure that you have enough reserves at all times that, you know, you'll be in an okay position.
And did no disrespect to your broker. Don't use a broker in your next transaction. Go straight to the bank. Save some money. My dad's a broker. I'm a broker.
Not planning on it.
Yeah. Don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a nightmare.
Don't go to Chase.
Uncle Jamie. Yeah. So he's a hard guy to turn down.
He's like,
I mean,
can you blame him?
Yes.
Hey, listen, I bank with Chase too, bro. Don't sweat it.
Son of a bitch, you too?
Yeah. Well, who do you
literally work for a bank?
You were banking with Wells Fargo.
That's not the point. I just don't want anybody looking at my accounts, man.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Somewhere out there is a listener going like, you know what? I listen to the Higher Standard, and this fucking guy always talks about his accounts, and I see them. There's not a lot of money here.
he's a phony. Yeah. He's one of those fake financial gurus.
It's at Fidelity, goddammit.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I gotta say, this is Saeed's idea. I would have never brought you on. I'm a terrible human being, but you know what, Saeed?
No. He was awesome. We appreciate you, man. Thank you for being the first one to do this. Let's definitely stay in contact. Please take us up on our offer. And I'm excited to see where this goes, man.
You know, we should do that Shark Tank thing where we like look back in like a year from now and be like, where is he now?
Oh, yeah. I like this.
Hopefully I didn't buy a car in that time.
Yeah, don't get fat. We will make fun of you.
Yeah.
Now that
we're friends, we're not.
I know where all your money went.
Yeah.
Dude, he's about to become a dad. Of course he's going to gain that weight.
Yeah.
Not all of us, bro.
I gained weight after getting married, man. I can't do it again.
Any birthday plans?
I mean, this is it right here. So, I mean,
gang.
It's a Tuesday, so. But, we'll celebrate on the weekend. But, you know, thank you guys for you know, having me on. And, you know, I'm glad I stumbled across your podcast a few months back. And I feel like it has really helped with, you know, my process and my journey and learning a lot of things that I normally don't really have the people to talk to about this sort of stuff. So I think that's a lot of your listeners too. They just really don't have anyone to casually talk about finances and not get judged for it. So,
we're judging.
You know, I appreciate it.
We're judging.
Yeah.
But we judge you in a loving way. That being said, if you ever in Orange County, you come down here, let us know. Yeah. We'll take you to dinner.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Hawaiian ribeyes, baby.
On the black card.
Well, yeah.
We're always down there.
On the black card, baby.
Yeah. Why is everybody got a reference to black card? We can't just take them to dinner. You guys got to be pricks about it.
When the waitress comes by, we go, this guy's got a black card.
Every time. So embarrassing.
If you have a pet that needs care, my wife is in Irvine, actually. So.
Oh, no shit.
Chris might have to take you up on that someday.
Yeah, my cat's like 18 years old.
I really hope you never have to see her, but yeah. She's down there.
Don't tell us where she works because I will rush in there one night with Saeed in a box. I think you got to put him down. He's acting crazy.
Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear.
All right, brother. Take care, man. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you for doing this. Right.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Bye.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everyone else out there in the world, welcome to the Higher Standard. This is the number one financial literacy podcast in the world.
Number one,
the top.
Don't get it confused.
The top of the top.
Creme de la creme.
Sitting next to me, my partner in time. The one and only Saeed Omar, everybody.
Oh, thank you, my man. Sitting next to me on my left is my partner in crime, Chris Nahibi. Welcome back to the show, everybody.
And behind the ones and twos, the man who came out from behind the dark depths of the desk. DJ Arun, everybody.
The one that can't afford a Zoom account.
Yeah, I probably should upgrade that plan at some point.
That's so embarrassing. Yeah,
we why didn't you upgrade it, bro? The upgrade button was right there. Why didn't you click it?
We normally use Riverside.
What if it got declined? What if it got declined?
This is a well, I'm not even going to go there with the decline thing. Nothing's more nerve-wracking than having to enter your credit card number fast. So I'm going to give them, I'm going to co-sign Rune on this one.
Okay.
But we do have a very expensive, much more expensive Riverside agreement. I thought Zoom worked out okay.
Yeah, I thought it worked out good. I mean, I appreciate Vache for coming on. I thought that was pretty impressive of him to.
Can I keep calling him Vache?
No, man.
Come on, man.
Put a little bit of respect on his name.
Put a little tilde on the E.
Yeah.
Make it sassy.
But if you're listening to this episode, whether that's on Apple or Spotify, please head over and leave us an honest 5-star review. We'll do a lot for the show. It means a lot to each and every single one of us. If you're watching us over on YouTube, like where Vache did, and he ended up sending us a DM, send in a question. He was able to get on the show. We'd be more than happy to answer you guys' question if it's a good one. Leave us a comment. Make sure you subscribe. Ring that notification bell. Smash that like button. Do all the moist, goody-good sassafras.
Nothing is more infuriating to see that the listeners are adopting that language and now quoting it in the comments.
So I have a bone to pick with, or not a bone. I want to bring you to the dinner table and sit down for a second. So that reel.
Whoa.
That reel that you made over tea time, that kind of backfired. All the comments were on my side, bro.
First of all, hold on a second. Hold on a second. I knew that all the women watching it would.
It wasn't just the women, bro. The homies were out there like, I aspire to have a relationship like this.
Sorry, I'm choking on the bullshit.
Try drinking some tea.
Yeah, I should drink some tea.
You should drink some tea.
I know. Look, I made the clip to make you look good.
You did. I appreciate
I did.
You.
I'm not pounding your knuckles.
Okay.
I'm not doing that.
No fuzzy wuzzy?
No, because you tried to trap me right now. This is entrapment.
This is not entrapment.
And you're cutting into my segment, which cuts into a Rune segment.
Oh, you're right.
Rune, honestly, brother, I'm trying to move this along for you, okay?
Oh, dude, specifically asked me. Don't let this go carry on too long. He has to edit the show tonight.
What?
No, tomorrow.
Why?
Tomorrow.
Why?
I'm flying out to SF.
What the fuck with your PTO, man?
Bro, I'm doing it on a Thursday. You do not own me on Thursday.
You own him on other days, though.
I own you on Tuesdays? This is very confusing.
Yeah, if I took a PTO today, it'd be...
All right. Let's focus on the show topics, boys.
Let's do it.
Let's ease into our sassy tone because we don't want to off-put too many listeners early.
Okay.
The Kobisi letter. The bullshit from Sight earlier is just sticking with me. The Kobisi letter.
Do you need some water?
No, I'm good. Thank you. That's very thoughtful of you.
Big brother?
I've got a job. Another big call by Apollo. Inflation will likely be above the Fed's 2% inflation target for the rest of 2024. If you want to ruin my day, that's how you do it, okay?
Yeah, man.
It's very difficult for me.
Not looking good.
We're going to pivot from there to the Fed is keeping interest rates higher for longer than normal.
I saw what it did there.
That one was interesting because we knew they had kept rates lower for longer than normal.
Right.
So it should come as no surprise that we're keeping rates higher for longer than normal, but we don't think about it.
We'll dive into it. We'll explain it. Yep.
We're going to get in there. We're going to talk about flexible side hustle, helping millions earn extra. A little cliche clickbait title, but there's some statistics in the first paragraph I thought were compelling.
Mm.
So for those of you out there who got a second job, a side hustle, we've talked a lot about employment numbers on the show, and we said, hey, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is completely full of shit. Well, this might actually prove that out.
Really?
I don't want to say that we're always right.
But we're getting a lot of love in the comments. We got some reviews that they basically called out like, man, you guys are the only ones that have been calling this from day one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pausing for emphasis. Yeah.
And at some point in the show, I'm going to weave in a little Jay Powell quote.
Yeah, that's a long Jay Powell quote.
Yeah, but there's a lot there that deserves some explaining. Not mansplaining, just explaining.
Oh, I don't like it when you mansplain to me on the show. I like it when you do it in private.
Got it.
All right. So this from the Kobisi letter. Another big call by Apollo. And Apollo is a very reputable firm. Inflation will likely be above the Fed's 2% target, inflation target, for the rest of 2024. Which, for those of you who have been following along, means that the Fed would be unlikely to cut rates. If inflation rises at its current pace for the rest of the year, then core CPI inflation will increase to 4.5%. I'm going to explain this out a little bit. We saw inflation dip down. And if you listen to the show and you go back, you know that we have said we were concerned about ever getting to the 2% target rate because shelter, home prices would have to come down. There would be a point, there would be this inflection point where inflation would not go any lower because shelter needed to drop to get there. And all the pundits in the real estate market were like, no, 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 man. No. Okay. Housing is not the problem. Rates are the problem. Right. And if you recall, we got really pissed off. Mm-hmm. Because, Syed, you know better than most, what is the solution to everybody in the real estate market for affordability? What is their solution?
Rates to come down.
It's never values to come down.
Right.
It's always rates to come down.
Rates to come down. I mean, that's a problem that's always going to be there. But the reason why housing needed to come down in order for this inflation problem to get under control is because it just makes up so much of the number, right? It makes up 35% or 34% of the CPI number, and I believe 18% of the PCE number.
Yeah. Arun, go ahead and mute the computer just in case.
Yeah, I just did that.
Like on the last show, you were watching sports, by the way. I caught you.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, I know.
Was?
I heard the audio from the sports when I was editing the show. Son of a bitch.
That, you know why I did that? You got comfortable.
Yeah, real comfortable.
You were you gave him like 3 or 4 compliments throughout the show.
I'm like, you're paying so much attention. Little did I know. All right. So let me tell you how profound this inflation pivot actually is. To get inflation back to the Fed's 2% target rate, right? Core inflation, core CPI for the rest of the year will have to come in at an unprecedented 0.1% month over month. Unprecedented, for those of you without a big lexicon, means it's never fucking happened before. Okay?
Since they started tracking this data.
Yeah, it has not happened. So unless we have an unprecedented, never before happened scenario where inflation is that low for that long, mm-hmm. you got two choices, that two likely scenarios. Scenario number one, the Fed says, hey, we are not going to hit 2% in target inflation, but we need to cut rates. Mm-hmm. That is probably the least probable scenario at this particular juncture in time. Scenario number two. Fed says, you know what, guys? We got a problem here. We're not going to be able to cut rates. Sorry.
Yeah.
The straight line lower inflation data seen in 2023 is officially gone. Now the question that the Covici letter and many other people in the ecosystem, in the ether of the world are posing is, could there possibly be hikes this year? And let me tell you why. This article, this post is not saying it. The chart that Arun just brought up is a chart showing inflation's trajectory, core CPI.
And what is core CPI?
Core inflation.
Yeah, when they remove food and energy.
Food and energy, sorry. I didn't realize you were asking me for the technical definition.
Yeah, drinking for the new listeners.
Yeah, okay. No, you're right. I'm wrong.
Yeah, the reason why they remove those this is what the Fed likes to look at when they remove food and energy is because food and energy is viewed as more volatile.
Yeah, this chart shows four possibilities. It shows you core CPI year over year, but then it shows you what would happen if core CPI came in at 0.1% month over month. Again, unprecedented. Mm-hmm. So never happened. It would be a straight shot all the way down. Unlikely. What if it came in at 0.2% month over month? It wouldn't be a straight shot all the way down, but it'd still be angling down.
Right.
You know, that's low. It's improbable. What if it was at 0.4% month over month, the last 3 month average? Guess what? That's going the wrong way.
Right. It is.
And of course, if it's 0.3% month over month, the last 6 month average, it's also going the wrong way. It's still going positive. So all of this to say, there was an event historically, which is starting to seem more and more apparent. And if you listen to the early days of the show during the Fed interest rate hiking cycle, we talked a lot about two different economic events historically. One, the 1980s.
Yep.
1980s had a double dip recessionary economy. When you dip, I dip, we dip.
That's good.
Right? 1970s had hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. This is beginning to look like one of those two scenarios may be reoccurring in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
You could see a double dip. Now, the argument is, have we been in a recession? Have we not? Is it going to be hyperinflation where inflation is going to rise without more and more, you know, aggressive pushes down vis-a-vis rate cut? I don't know the answer to that, but I know something is changing.
And this is why Jerome Powell and all the members at the FOMC did not want to come out and celebrate too early. when everybody else was out there, come on, hurry up, cut rates, we're good. Inflation's on a downward trend. They understood that, look, this could very much easily reaccelerate again. Yeah. Their plan, they got it down from 9.1%, right, all the way down to 3%, okay? And then what happened? January's figure came in hotter than expected, 3.1%. February, 3.2%. March, 3.5%. That's just going in the opposite direction. The big issue with March was there was no longer seasonality at play. We covered this on the last episode.
We did.
Right? What is seasonality? What are some things that looks like what seasonality can impact this inflation number, right? You got energy, right? Can impact the winter months, right? That's how it impacts the January figures probably, or maybe even some February figures. You, people have high heating bills and whatnot, right? You have people going back to school shopping. These are just examples of seasonality issues. During the springtime, I mean, yes, real estate starts to pick up a little bit, but it's not like it is in the summertime. In January, February, and in December, you're dealing with holiday seasons, right? So real estate tends to die down a little bit because nobody's looking to buy during those months, or not nobody, but it's not as much activity out there. So the March figure really, you know, shined a huge light on the problem.
It did. And let's talk a little bit about what we've seen so far from Yahoo Finance here. Mm-hmm. The Fed is keeping interest rates higher for longer than normal, the length of time from the last hike to the first cut. Okay? So keep that in mind. Last hike, first cut. Fed Chair Jay Powell. I like how everybody's calling him Jay now. They're like, you know what? He doesn't get Jerome anymore.
Yeah.
We're cutting this bitch. Well,
that's crazy that they spelled it like this, too.
J-A-Y, baby.
That's not his name, though.
Jay Powell.
J-A-Y is a full name. It's J as in just, it's supposed to be a J.
I think we've all come to the conclusion that we are having much more influence on society as a podcast than we recognize.
Honestly, if 20 years from now, the names that are, you know, common baby names that are selected, yeah, it's going to be because of us.
JP, baby.
JP from the hood.
Bache. Yeah.
Bache, man. You got me second guessing.
I can see your wheels turning. Shit. The federal chair, Jay Powell, said Tuesday that it will take longer than expected to achieve the confidence needed to get inflation down to the central bank's 2% target. Ironically, this came literally the meeting after they said, you know what? I think we're Fed's on the current path that we're on is what we planned on. We're going in the right direction.
Yeah.
Now it's going to take longer than expected. What is it, Jay?
So there's a lot behind this that you really got to dissect. So the reason why we bring this stuff up is you can really tell how the rest of the year is going to play out when he starts talking this crazy, mm-hmm, right?
He's already backpedaling big time.
Oh, he's backpedaling so hard right now.
This is tantamount to moonwalking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's pulling out his Michael Jackson right now.
Well, it wasn't just him, though. Okay, in the days since, other Fed officials signaled a more hawkish stance due to hotter-than-anticipated inflation data in the first quarter. On Wednesday, Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester said inflation said the central bank doesn't need to cut rates in a hurry.
I don't think
inflation said that to you, Loretta.
Yeah, exactly.
Rune, you okay? You fall down back there? What's going on?
I stretched my legs. I forgot there's shit under here.
I thought we put the porta potty down there for you.
Yeah, he started cramping. He's lying. Yeah. He started cramping. Yeah.
Fuck you, jeez, guys.
You're working out, bro. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
It's a sports injury. Yeah. She said, you know, you struck me as a pickleball guy.
Oh, no, man.
I think you would like pickleball.
You haven't tried it. How can you knock it?
I think you would like
it. I also suck at tennis and ping pong.
So. I suck at tennis and ping pong, too, but I would play ping pong. Pickleball with you.
Fuck.
You just want to play balls with me.
I know. That's how I was going. And I had to back off. I wanted to be restrained.
You wanted to play balls with the pickle. That's what you wanted to do.
Not doing it. She had said previously that she expected to cut rates 3 times later this year. So, you know, Loretta is a liar.
That's a lie, Loretta. Yeah,
that's a lie.
You're not being honest.
Chicago Fed President Austin Goolsbee said Friday that progress on inflation has stalled, and that it makes sense to wait before cutting rates. As pointed out by Apollo chief economist, there's that name Apollo again, Torsten Slok. It's the O with the slash in it.
That's how you knew.
I mean, did I say it right? I don't know. Whatever. The current higher for longer rate cycle has already surpassed historic averages. It has been 10 months since the Fed last chose to raise rates. Typically, the first cut has come roughly 8 months following the final hike. The ongoing rate pause is the fourth longest higher for longer stretch since 1968. And I think it's safe to say, I'm going to go out on a limb here, kids.
Give it to me.
Okay. Arun pulled up a beautiful chart. Your timing is exceptional. I hope if you are watching sports again, that whatever this commonality of exceptional timing from you keeps up. This chart shows the long periods, how long it took to get a rate cut.
Right. So during these time frames here, we were in an interest rate hiking cycle. Were they? Yeah. Right. And then, so yeah.
From the last hike to the first cut, this is how long it took. Now, yeah, we have routinely pointed out three really distinct recessionary economies that we thought were corollaries, and two more than the other three. We don't really see that this is a housing recession, so we carve out 2007's Great Recession, right?
Right.
But after the rate hiking cycle that ended in 2007, it was 15 months before the rate cutting cycle started. That was the single largest recessionary event since the Great Depression, a 2.5 standard deviation event, 15 months.
Right.
Okay. For perspective, the 1970s hyperinflation, 18 months. Wow. That is what Jerome Powell has been concerned about for a long time. The 1997-98, okay, 18 months. Now, what's interesting is the 80s, double dip recession. The problem is you can't take the 3 months, 6 months, 7 months, or 4 months in that period of time because there were several that happened. You kind of lump them together, you get 9 and 11.
Well, it's because that was the example during that time frame over there in the, I think in the 80s, and let's see, even in the 70s, I believe, right, is when from 70 and then they started back again in 71 that they started to cut rates too early.
Exactly.
And then they had to reaccelerate again. And then look, so really that 18 months might as well be 22 months.
Correct. And us being at 10 months, far passing the average, tells me we are in fact going to be long in the tooth. It is now April.
Right.
May, June, July, right? Three more months. That's 13 months.
Right.
Right. If you go August, September, October, let's say you get a cut in November, right? That's 17 months. You are now past the Great Recession, 15 months, and you're approaching 1997-98 or the 1969-1970 18-month period.
Right.
There is a strong possibility, I think, we wind up there.
I agree. And so let's dive into a little bit as to why does this matter? What does it mean, higher for longer? Okay, this is what it means. We talked about it on an episode. I don't know if it was the last one or two episodes ago, that credit card delinquencies are, you know, starting to reach all-time highs, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a problem.
It's a real problem.
Even mortgage guys are like, shit, this is a problem.
So high credit card minimum debt payments, right? Household debt is going to continue to increase, real problems for households across the nation, right? Chances of more, like, mass layoffs continue to increase. If you're a listener out there and we're dealing with this time and you think that we're just going to automatically just fall into this soft landing, this Goldilocks scenario.
Gumdrops and lollipops scenario.
Gumdrops and lollipops because the media isn't out there, you know, spreading the fear. Okay, look. It's happened 11 out of the last 14 times they've done this. It's ended in a recession, right? Mm-hmm. And all signs are pointing to this being a deep recession. Just because they haven't started changing their tunes yet doesn't mean they can't ultimately switch and change. Just look no further than the Fed. The Fed started off saying this is going to be transitory. Next thing you know, they said, okay, we're only going to have to raise rates 7 times. What did they do? First of all, it wasn't transitory. Then they said they're going to raise rates 7 times. It wasn't 7 times. They ended up doing 11 times. Now they're saying they're going to cut rates 3 times this year. Guess what's going to happen in June when they release their next projections? I bet you they change it. It's not going to be 3 rate cuts by the end of the year.
And that, everybody, that right there is why the Fed has a notorious history for not being accurate.
Right. And they're allowed to change their projections. And the way they just label it is, oh, we're data dependent.
Can you imagine if that was your job description? You'd be allowed to change stuff?
That's what I'm trying
to... Hey, Chris, you said you were going to have this done by 5. Yeah, not going to have that done by 5. What happened? I started looking at the data... And I just realized,
you know, the data changed on me.
that I just don't think the data supports me getting this done by 5 o'clock.
Right. So also, higher for longer. What else does it mean? This unaffordability crisis in the housing market, that's going to be around for a lot longer. That's what that means.
Yeah, it's...
Which I think right now is a good time for me to bring in this quote from Jerome Powell. Could you please bring that up? There's a lot to get into, a lot of details in here. Sorry, you might need to zoom that in just a little bit. Sorry.
All the jokes you make about my reading being...
No, right there. Perfect. That's good. Thank you. So Jay Powell said this a week ago, Jerome Powell, right? Secretary of the
Today is April 23rd.
Right, the head of the FOMC. The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it is likely to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence. Okay, so let's pause right there. It's going to take longer to get to our 2% target range. So these all the projections we've given you guys so far, that's now out the window. We're wrong about that. That's what that's saying.
You know, I read a really compelling article recently which made a very interesting argument that 2% should not be the target anymore.
It shouldn't. It was always 2 to 3%. And then your boy Bernanke, I don't even know how to pronounce his name.
Ben Bernanke.
Yeah, I'm going to have to kick him out the club when I get in. I'm going to gather up the troops and be like, hey.
Or is it Bernanke because the Bacha?
I mean, it depends, right?
It's very clear that there's a clear vowel issue here.
Right. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that it should never just be target, but maybe that it was by design. We had this tinfoil hat moment where we talked about maybe they knew. Maybe they knew it was not achievable. And this way, they can just keep this hope.
That's the best spin the Fed could make at the next meeting, by the way. Is if they still feel, if the pressure on the banking system is so great, and I truly believe that it is, that you're going to need to cut rates. You got the national debt going crazy. The government just passed a $95 trillion package, whatever it was.
Yeah, man.
That's going to Israel, Ukraine, and I think it was Taiwan or something.
I didn't know. I know Israel and Ukraine.
And while we're here tonight, they passed the TikTok ban.
Oh, they passed it.
The Senate passed it. Yeah.
So now it's gonna hit Joe Biden's desk.
He's already said he's gonna sign it.
Or is it, has it already reached the House?
House
before Senate. It was before.
Bruh.
Yeah. It's, damn.
I know we don't get political.
That was unanimous. Was it unanimous again?
I don't know. I literally came up while we were talking to Vacha, and I didn't get a chance.
Holy
to
Holy cow!
I mean, it's gonna force him to sell.
Yeah.
People make a big deal out of this, though. You don't get Instagram and Facebook in China.
Right.
By the way, this guy in China has thsp.com. I've been sending him the nastiest emails because I sent him, I'm like, hey, man, I'll buy for you for $500. He's like, $30,000. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, bro.
Yeah, it just took a little Google
search. He's like, I don't know who you are. I don't care about you. And I'm like, I own the trademark to THSP, which is a lie.
Yeah.
THSP in the United States. I'll sue anybody you sell it to.
Yeah.
I'm just, at this point, I'm like, he's so extreme.
Yeah.
And you can just tell it's just some dude who bought like a bunch of like random ass letters together.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to hold on to it to sell for some egregious amount of money. Mm. And I'm like, dude, negotiate.
Right.
He's like, $30,000. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Right. So then he goes on to say, right, that said, we think policy is well positioned to handle the risks we face. If higher inflation doesn't persist, we can maintain the current level of restriction for as long as needed. Okay, bro. Like, how long do you think we can really hang on before something breaks, right? And he goes on to say that. At the same time, we have significant space to ease should the labor market unexpectedly weaken. I want everyone to realize he was reading off a piece of paper. This was predetermined. So he knows. He's giving himself an out. He's like, look, the second the labor market data weakens, what does that mean? Unemployment goes up. That means we see mass layoffs across the nation. They have the ability to, you know, turn the switch back on, let the money start flowing again. But what's that ultimately going to do? Inflation is going to continue to reaccelerate, only making this a bigger problem later down the road.
Here's the problem is that the housing market and employment has been so unresponsive to the Fed interest rate hikes and the quantitative tightening. And it hasn't moved a whole lot, at least according to their data, which, again, I question really whether or not it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get into the employment reason why in just a moment if you want to do that still. But if you ultimately feel the need to take pressure off of other parts of the system that are strained, like the banking sector,
right,
like the national debt, then you're going to light these things back on fire. There's no way out now.
I mean, look, we're not the only ones out there. Look, so we've gone over routinely on the show. They have a dual mandate, right? Price stability, making sure that prices don't get out of hand, right? That's this whole inflation discussion that we're having. Mm-hmm. And maximum employment. So, you know, the lowest number of unemployment as possible. So that's what they're referring to here. So they do have a duty to make sure that unemployment doesn't get out of hand. And look, at the rate that we're going, I don't see a world where we achieve a soft landing at this point.
No.
Because these job numbers, I cannot be trusted.
The situation we're in right now is not soft.
Right.
Everyone's like, oh my God, they want to make up this scenario where life goes back to the way it was in the last 14 years where we had artificial interest rate deflation and everything was fucking cash flowing and money was coming in everywhere.
Right.
Let me be clear, okay? Let me be as honest and as bold as I can just to drive the point home. That world does not exist in the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, man. That's
at least, if ever again in your adult lifetime.
Yeah, you're going to look back at this time and be like, damn, that was a good time.
So if you think a soft landing is a return to that, you are living in fucking crazy land.
Yeah.
It's never making YouTube because they keep banning me for saying the F word.
Yeah, at some point we're going to have to clean up the show, but... I mean,
Not this point.
No, we're not there yet.
I want to drive home the jobs thing on this Entrepreneur article. I'll hit it fast before we get to the pop.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. This, according to Entrepreneur, the data here, I think, is really interesting, but I'm just going to hit you with a highlight reel. The flexible side hustle is helping millions earn extra cash. Okay. And might be, quote, more attractive, end quote, than an office job. I don't really care about it. I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to pitch you on some bullshit. Okay. I'm so tired of e-com nonsensical shit. But here's a quote I want to read to you. 55% of Gen Zers and millennials have a side hustle.
I love that.
55%.
Good for them.
Okay. And 80% of them say they depend on the additional cash given the current economy. A recent survey from online lending marketplace LendingTree found. So 55% of Gen Zers have a second job, and 80% of those people are absolutely relying on it just to make ends meet. This is why the jobs data is all sorts of wrong.
This is why the jobs data is all sorts of wrong. This is why the GDP figure is all sorts of wrong.
And like GDP, the government is spending so much money right now propping up GDP.
Exactly. And usually, like during wartime, or if we're giving aid to support, you know, some of our allies, that helps boost the GDP figures. And you got to remember, why does this matter? Okay, maybe you think we're getting too granular or we're geeking out on some of these numbers. This is the data that the Fed is relying on, okay, to say, hey, yeah, we can keep rates right here. There's no problem. Look, jobs are great. GDP's
strong.
GDP is great. Unemployment is at an all-time low. Like, and I think on the last episode, we talked about how the Fed came out and said household balance sheets are really strong. Yeah,
and
bro.
Brian Moynihan came out. I almost kicked the screen.
Yeah. Okay, balance sheets. Okay. Mm. Balance sheet doesn't mean shit, right? It's not liquid, right? It's people's houses. So you want people to have to sell their houses to eventually make ends meet? Like, maybe that is the goal for them, right? That's the only way.
But that's unrealized balance sheet assets. That means nothing to you until you sell your home. Your home being worth $5 million means jack shit to you until you sell it.
Yeah. And maybe, but that's my thing, right? The only way to bring these home prices down is there needs to be more sellers than there are buyers.
But in order for that to happen, you need to have more defaults and more financial issues in the marketplace.
Exactly. So,
which means more stress on banks that they can't take or as it is now.
Right. Exactly. And what
credit
are we
quality is the only thing holding the banking system up.
Right. And what are we, and you're right. And kudos to us. Right. I know we get a bad rep, but after the 2008 Great Financial Crisis, right? The Dodd-Frank Act was passed, and look, now we're making sure that people can actually afford the loans that they're getting.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that, okay? Yeah, just like the home builders got it right this time. The home builders did not oversupply the market, so it kept values up and kept their inventory and their sales going. So the home builders got it right, and they're trading at great numbers right now. Mm-hmm. The banks got it right this time, right, except for interest rate risk because the Fed took the unprecedented turn.
Yeah, man.
And now you got every bank in the country, regardless of size, has assets on their balance sheet, loans that aren't as valuable today as they once were in a lower interest rate environment, because mm-hmm. you can get higher interest rates for similarly situated loans right now. So that's a lower than market rate. It has interest rate risk built into it. Yet these banks don't have to sell anything. They don't have any economic losses because they're not taking credit losses. If this scenario happens and banks take credit losses in the future on some assets, mm-hmm. like homes, like credit cards,
right?
And you're a consumer bank, Brian Moynihan, bad idea.
Right.
Whatever, what do I know?
Right.
Okay, then guess what? Now you've taken away the only thing propping up the banking sector, and you wind up in a situation where you got to ask yourself, do we want banks failing?
That's the other thing. That's the thing that I think a lot of people get confused by is, let's just say a situation happens where, God forbid, banks go down, and some banks are too big to let fail again, okay? Mm-hmm. And they need to get bailed out. I easily can see this happen, right? If the Fed waits too long to act, okay? The banks operate based on what the Fed tells them they're going to do. If they drastically change their plan and their plan of attack and banks haven't accounted for their plan, right? You can't drastically change it and expect them to, you know, plan for the future that only giving them, what, 6 months to a year?
You know what would be a good indicator of this?
What?
New York Community Bank reports its earnings this Friday.
Mm.
So by the time this next show comes out, it'll obviously be the Friday before the Tuesday that the show comes out. But I think that'll be a good indicator of how the market will respond. I think this Friday will be a very pivotal day.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know that it's going to be anything good or bad per se, but I think we'll get a better feel for the strain in the markets.
You get a better feel for the strain in the markets. But I think the really, really big day that now everyone's got circled on their calendar is that June meeting. That June Fed meeting. Okay?
Bro, that's so far out for me. Like, emotionally, I can't even think that far out.
I know, but that's the one, right, where they're forced to give their projections and update where they see the rest of the year going. And if it changes from them predicting 3 rate cuts to maybe 2 or 1 or maybe none. Game over. Curtains. Curtains for so many people.
And the sad part is here's where I'm like torn, and this sucks because, and I assume that a lot of people in a lot of businesses are like this. Like in my business, in the banking sector, rate cuts, great for business. I want rate cuts. But then I think to myself, okay, wait a minute. I don't see a scenario where rate cuts really help things. And then, God damn it, the real estate people keep saying, hey guys, they're going to cut rates. It's going to drive mortgage rates down. When mortgage rates go down, then we'll see the more activity in the housing market. Stop saying this, real estate people. Stop. There's a lot of volatility in the treasuries which influence mortgage rates. Yes. But again, we have said on the show countless times we are in a yield curve inversion. The 10-year is higher than the 2-year. Okay? That is an inversion. Those typically precede recessionary economies. At some point in time, you're going to see upward pressure on the 10-year. It does have to get higher than the 2-year. Sure, the 2-year can drop, but the 10-year has to rise too. And even though they cut the Fed funds rate, that doesn't mean the long side will go down. As a matter of fact, it might go up, and it's likely to go up. Mm-hmm. If it goes up, you're not going to see a big, significant drop in mortgage rates. And just so you know, anything below 8% is still below the historical average, and we are below 8% currently, even at 7% that we're at right now for mortgage rates.
But you can't. You got to be careful with that too, because when we tell people that, they think, oh, okay, so below historical average, they think it's okay. But you got to remember, home prices have increased at such a dramatic pace that they have not kept up with wages. So you're not able to afford the same home, let's say 30 years ago or back in the 70s or 80s when mortgage rates were at 8 or 10%. Okay, well, home prices weren't as much, right?
And this is where Uncle Scotty, my boy, gets it right. He was like, you're going to see a 40-year mortgage come up because this is the quandary.
Right. This is exactly. This is the quandary. You're right, right? I mean, that's that loan product of 30 years. And for listeners out there that are maybe getting lost in this, right? I mean, when you get a loan for your home, you're getting a loan for 30 years, mm-hmm. right? And that's been the long-standing product in the space for, I don't know, since the beginning of...
During the lead up to the Great Recession, there was a 40-year amortizing loan that had 10 years, like a 10-year balloon payment at the end of it.
Oh, I see.
It was 30-year term, but a 40-year amortization for a while.
Oh, a balloon that you would just have to refinance out of.
Yeah, you would just pay it off if you could.
I mean, okay.
But yeah, that was a thing for a while. But
so the only way to combat this problem that Chris is saying here, or somebody tipped him off to, is, you know, change that product to now back again to a 40-year loan. But what does that do ultimately to home prices?
Lights the home price. Dude, the market would go on fire.
Yeah,
it would be. Everybody and their mother would be buying at that point in time.
So then you gotta ask yourself, like, dude, like I know there's a lot of people, man, that are just sitting and waiting on the sidelines, waiting for shit to come down. Well, there's so much uncertainty out there, right? You can't blame him. But at the same time, like, I could see a situation, man, where mass layoffs happen and there is going to be fire sales.
I am more worried about layoffs now than I had been at the beginning of the year.
Saving, you know, household saving, the rate of savings, right?
Mm-hmm. It's at a low point.
It's at a low point, right? Household debt is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
You know, they're literally...
Those are two very divergent numbers at the moment.
Yeah, and they're literally suggesting that, you know, people have a lot of equity in their homes. Like, big rule of thumb, don't take out, you know, a loan against your house to manage some of your debts like that, right? Like, that's not what that's there for.
I mean, you can if you have a home equity line of credit and you're using it responsibly, but for most Americans,
if you're responsible,
that's not the thing that's going to happen.
You got to solve the problem first.
Yeah, I don't want to demonize anybody, but I do want to demonize Arun. It is pop culture hour. Hit me.
I had a listener, by the way, hit me up about this.
Say what?
Very upset.
Upset?
At the lack of a topic being brought up. Yeah.
What do you mean?
How'd you guys not discuss the whole Drizzy beef yet?
Oh. I know this is going to sound as a shock to many.
You sit next to him.
Syed and I have been beefing for a while. that's why we call it a little beef. Because he's little.
Shout out to Sean. Sean Fisher.
Oh, is it Sean?
Yeah.
I got to be honest. I haven't kept up. There's too much of this weird beef thing going on. And I'm so hyper, like, weirded out by the fact that some of this is AI driven.
Yeah, but they've come out and they've dispelled some of that. Yeah, the Drake, Rick Ross.
So this Kendrick, Rick Ross, Kendrick Drake Lamar thing beef. Is real?
It's really Drake and Kendrick Lamar.
Why are Drake and Kendrick Lamar going at it, though?
I think Kendrick just had enough sitting on the sidelines and he came and took shots at him, and then no one really had Drake's back and he just literally took shots at the entire industry.
Let me be candid, okay? And I know this is
gonna,
I'm not gonna lie.
If you listen to the diss track, I didn't know Drake had this in him. It was really impressive. It was really impressive.
Are you happy that it's meme?
It was so good.
I haven't heard it.
It's like nothing short of amazing.
So here's my thoughts on this. Okay, like if you're Kendrick Lamar, you had one really good album. Then
that's the big knock on him.
Is it? Yeah, his first album was great.
Well, it's that he takes too long in between projects. But a lot of his fan base like that. It's kind of like the whole Dr. Dre thing, right? Where it's like you sit, you wait.
Dr. Dre's a bad example. I'm still waiting for the Chronic 2.
Oh, the Detox album. I know. I think a lot of people. I think he's officially like given up on that. But it's
he's got tons of songs recorded with tons of artists that he just never put out.
But then stylistically, it all changes, you know, every like few years. So it's like shit becomes outdated, you know? So
look, I get that. But at the same time, man, it's like, look, and like Kendrick Lamar, here's where you can't knock Drake.
Did you ever used to get into this stuff like as a kid? I know you used to be like you still are a hip hop head, but like the whole beef stuff where like the diss tracks?
No. So I was into it when it was Biggie and Pac.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best.
But
that was a little bit, that's a lot scarier.
Yeah, that was like, I'm gonna kill you, like, you're going to die. And like, these guys are like, you're ugly and your album suck.
Yeah, I'm gonna steal your girl.
Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing is like, I've seen some interviews with Tupac where he looked like a very different human. And I wonder how much of it was acting.
Yeah, because he was a good actor too.
He was a good actor. And like, he was very like liberal arts, kind of a feminine in that interview.
Mm-hmm.
And he
did ballet.
Did ballet. So I'm like, did we get like the
what happened?
I don't think he got hard. I think that was an act.
Where was the shift? No, bro, you don't get Thug Life tattooed on your stomach and it be an act, right?
Bro, if you gave me his fame and money.
Yeah, it's all about the money.
Yeah.
No, guys, come on. I think he really lived that life.
He probably just covered up the T when he went to, you know.
Thug Life?
That's in Thug Life.
So stupid. Oh, jeez.
All right, there you go. We covered that. The next one is literally the TikTok ban.
Yeah, done, man. House approved. Let me see if I got the... Did you pull it up?
I do have it here, yeah.
Yeah, I got it while we were in the show. I was like, oh, my God.
This is from CNN Business. Congress just passed a potential TikTok ban. Here's what happens next. Oh, man.
Yeah, can you imagine TikTok right now?
Basically, it sits on Biden's desk now. He's supposed to sign it, which he probably will. And then after that...
Imagine he's like, fuck that.
He's gonna sign that.
He's like, I love these trends too much.
And basically, after that, there's 270 days for a U.S. company to purchase TikTok.
Yeah, that was this is a forcing it to sale, which it will if it needs to. But can you imagine the president came out and said, you know, wait a minute, I've got an idea. And by the president, I mean whoever the hell's really controlling the strings.
Uh-huh.
And he says, how do we get young people to vote for me?
Mm. Ooh, TikTok. We let no, but that's too young, TikTok. Right? Then they don't have. They're not adults yet.
Can Elon purchase TikTok as well if he wanted to?
Make it TikTok X.
Imagine.
Right. You have Malcolm X as like your new Twitter bird.
That's sick.
Right.
Fire.
Yeah. That'd be dope.
It would be dope. I don't see him doing it though.
No, I can't. He's our. Oh, we got to. I got to talk to all of you, the audience, and all of you, the host. In
I don't know what's going on. All this finger waving.
I'm having a moment where I don't know if we should kick shit up a notch.
God, I had to hold back from so many jokes right there. I'm having a moment. I'm literally juggling jokes in my head. Like, can't say that.
Yeah, there's a lot we can't say. TikTok, you know, I haven't really been posting on keeping up with them, but I have been keeping up with X. And you could tell that Elon Musk is trying to make long form format. I noticed that PBD is actually uploading his entire podcast to X. Should we put our entire podcast on X?
That's just another thing, right?
What's the upload time?
Yeah, what is it?
It's probably 6 years for our quality and what we put out.
Yeah.
But I mean, should we do it?
Doesn't hurt to try.
Oh, it hurts to try, baby.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, do the same thing that we're doing right now. Test it out for 3 months.
I feel like the Spotify listeners are going to be really upset.
Yeah,
these motherfuckers. Motherfuckers went to Twitter or X before it comes to us.
I've gone to Spotify podcast and tried to figure out how to do this like 16 times. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'll put it on you guys to figure it out.
They make it very, very complicated.
It's such a fucking... And right now, the way the syndication platform works is like it's all like in... I can just load it to one syndication platform and push it all out.
Mm-hmm.
Push it. But... No, I get it.
Take that.
People do want to watch.
The Diddy jokes are stupid. I have people hitting me up like, so what's going on with Diddy now? Like, I'm supposed to be their Diddy correspondent.
I'm a full Diddy correspondent.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's going on with him?
He took me shopping.
So he's good. You guys are good.
Everything about Diddy's life I now have in retrospect, and it's just like the whole man butler thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that guy just went away. I always wonder what happened to that guy.
Oh, he gave an interview.
Like a long time ago?
He gave a number of interviews about their falling out. Yeah.
It was very transparent?
He said, you don't say no to Diddy.
Let that sit.
Yeah.
Sit in that.
All right, Arun, what do you got for me?
Next one's Taylor Swift surprised some fans with dropping out 15 new songs overnight, and two of them might be about Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, so there's smoke in that room, too. Everybody's smoking.
Just drama, that's drama.
That's not the way kids use that phrase.
No, everybody wants to smoke.
Yeah,
everybody's handing out smoke.
Damn it. Yeah. Everyone's getting handed the smoke. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. No. Sure. Why not? Taylor Swift surprises fans with drops of 15 new songs. I mean, I'm in the minority here.
Don't ask me if I'm a Swiftie.
Nah, come on.
I mean, of course I am.
Of course. I'll be honest. Not a huge fan.
Okay, if I'm comparing Kim Kardashian or Taylor Swift, I would say Taylor Swift to me seems more valuable.
Valuable?
That's to the U.S. economy. To the U.S. economy.
She can prop up the U.S. economy. She can make the Super Bowl valuable. Kim Kardashian just ruins people's lives.
Ruins people's lives, huh?
Kanye.
Yeah, who's the basketball player?
He went from pink polos. Name a basketball player that's dated her that had a successful career afterward. Oh, wait.
Yeah. What is this?
Name anyone that dated Kim.
Okay, but here's... Okay, no, but hold on.
All these fake butts
wait,
out
wait,
here...
Wait, hold on.
That's this chick's fault.
Wait, are we going to do this?
Shame on her.
Are we going to do this? Because you could pull up Taylor Swift. She doesn't have, like, a clean track record, bro. She's been...
Oh, she's been around.
She's had her share... I don't want to say been around, but she's had her share of guys.
Oh, she's been around.
Bring up the list, okay, Odin. Bring up the list. Let's look at this.
It's not like it's 50 people deep. It's like, what, 30?
Dog, 30?
Those are rookie numbers, bro.
Rookie numbers?
I put those up in my first year.
Jake Gyllenhaal? Oh,
look at this. 15 more rows.
15 more rows?
These aren't confirmed.
Confirmed. Calvin Harris, bro. Wow. You see the way that expanded?
Hold on.
Oh, wait, holy no, shit.
I gotta put glasses
you better
on.
Clip, you better clip this. This shit about to go viral.
Taylor Swift can't date Taylor Swift. She's underneath Zac Efron.
No, Taylor Swift, Jonas. Let's see. Who else we got here? Adam Young, Travis Kelce. How's Travis Kelce on the bottom of the list? Put that guy up top. That's who she's currently dating.
Who's Andrew Hardwick?
Joe Jonas, Taylor Lautner,
Connor Kennedy.
Damn, man. She's.
There's no way. Come on. This list is ridiculous.
Oh, that's your boy.
Saeed.
Loki, dog.
Have you been watching?
You haven't watched the show.
Hey, it doesn't matter. I know it's Loki, though. Hey, doesn't that make you more upset?
You're not allowed
to say that. How's she going to do Loki like that?
First of all, there's no way.
What are you talking about?
How many names are here? I'm just
there you go. Why don't you do that one? Taylor Swift's dating history 6 days ago.
That doesn't make it more real, bro.
Come on, bro. This from Cosmopolitan. I've never been on this website.
God damn, that's a long list.
Okay, 2008. Joe Jonas. Look at this.
One,
holy
two,
shit.
Three, four, five, six, seven.
These are
eight,
just the
nine,
biggest
ten,
names,
11.
Bro.
That's only 11 people.
But these are the biggest names.
That's 11 people in 15 years, dude. That's not that bad. That's not that bad. And you don't know that she had sex with all of them.
I feel like I know that.
Okay, look. It's Taylor
I'm
Swift.
Saying, these guys are studs, bro. You tell me she's going to turn that down?
I think you guys are demonizing
what
are
you
angel.
You're being super
American.
Okay, dude. Kim Kardashian put out a sex tape.
She didn't. Her mom did.
Okay.
Wait, is that really the rumor?
No, that's true. That's true. Her mom licensed the sex tape.
Yeah, dog. Come on. You know
that.
That
was her mom's idea. That's known.
Holy
I mean,
shit.
If you listen to that kind of thing.
And if you look at Kim Kardashian's history, bro, she just levels up. That's all she does. She just levels up. Each one is a level
I've
up.
I've got one massive beef with Kim Kardashian, okay? It's just...
How do you let go of Reggie Bush, though? Right, that guy was a stud.
I don't know.
That was an amazing... That was like a match made in heaven.
Why?
I love Reggie. That's Odun's
boy,
too.
You just like Reggie Bush.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my real beef with Kim Kardashian and the Kardashian family, is they've given body dysmorphia to too many young women.
Oh, yeah, that's a fact. All jokes put aside, that's something that, like, I'll never be okay with.
That's my only real beef with Kardashians, is, like, they've hyper-changed the way women look at their bodies. This whole Brazilian butt lift, the extreme. Kim Kardashian is a pretty woman. But what she has done to, like, just butts is ridiculous.
Not just that, bro.
Like, that is not attractive in any way, shape, or form.
Reconstructive face surgery, too?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot there. And
That is just, it's like, it's heartbreaking. Like, I have a young daughter, man, right?
Yeah, I get it.
To think that this type of pressure might be on her someday, and hopefully, you know, we could do a better job of making her realize, like, you know, you don't have to go down this path, or this shouldn't provide you any kind of value. But it's like what I try to tell my wife too is like, man, a lot of the stuff that I see personally that females do, they're doing it for other females. You're not doing this for me. Because I'm telling you right now what I like. I like a more natural look anyways.
I think most people do, but this weird, here's the thing, is like if you have facial surgery and you look like a different person, like I don't care. That's on you. If you like to look in the mirror, fine. But if you look like a disproportionately weird-shaped human being, and now other women want to look like a disproportionately weird-shaped human being, okay, now you're fucking with people. Now you don't look like a prettier version of you. You just have an abnormally shaped body that is becoming more and more status quo. And yeah, sure, big boobs were a thing in the 80s. I get it. But there were women with big boobs like that. There are very few women with a tiny waist and a gigantic, ridiculous ass.
And the big problem that I had with it, too, was, like, she went out of her way to make it seem like it was natural.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like, oh, I took an x-ray of my ass. Look, right? You're like, come on, dog. What are we doing here?
I don't know.
All right, next article. We talked about this off record, actually. The burglars that made off with $30 million in the historic California heist, weeks later, still no one's been caught. Remember it happened during Easter weekend?
So where did they steal the $30 million from?
It was a warehouse out in L.A.
Yeah, it was like totally like Goodfellas.
Oh, a warehouse? Like, who owned the warehouse?
Full Goodfellas.
Goodfellas, you mean Ocean's 11?
No. Well, Ocean's 11 was referenced in the article, but you remember in Goodfellas, the Lufthansa heist?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. That was in a warehouse.
Oh, my God, man.
They always call us Goodfellas. Rest in peace, Ray Liotta.
I didn't read a lot into this. You know about this?
I just saw the headline. I got to be honest. As much as like it's sensational and stuff, I kind of like passed by because I was like, meh, they're insured.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
This could be an insurance play.
Yeah, they're insured, you know? Who's going to get hurt here? The insurance company? You've already been charging us a whole hell of a lot of money extra anyway. You're going to get $30 million from Chris's policies. You've been
That just means they're going to
raging like up,
increase everyone's premium to make up for it. That's the only way they make up for it.
Well, everybody in the insurance industry, in the warehouse industry, sure. Not my car insurance, though. You guys already got me for 30%.
Talking about cars, Tesla Q1 profits fall 55%, but stock still jumps after the speed production of cheaper vehicles
and the 10% layoff. That's what helped.
Yeah,
that's really
10% layoff. They had that other thing too, the Cybertrucks
recall.
All 4,000. Yeah.
What do you mean? That's they've produced 4,000 Cybertrucks.
So what happens is the accelerator pedal, and for those of you listening, I'll try to do my best to describe it. If you push it down, the pedal metal cover that's on top of it has a tendency to slide up and off.
Oh, my God.
Right? Which is not a problem in and of itself. It's not a big deal. Because if you're pushing the gas pedal down and it slides up, no big deal. The problem is if you push it down and it slides up, there is a weird position when it slides up and gets stuck in like this crevasse, and it gets locked in the full throttle position.
Full throttle.
It's such a rare, random set of circumstances, but it can happen. So imagine if you were to floor it, and your foot slips up because you like jerked back or something.
Yeah.
It could lock into that position because it has a tendency to slip up.
Has anybody gotten hurt from that?
I don't know if they have, but MKBHD did a demo where he loosened his up and then showed what it looked like when the truck was off.
Mm.
And that's apparently what the recall's about.
He's such a stud.
Weren't you supposed to get yours like 2-3 years ago?
It's set for delivery in October, but I'm trying to find somebody to sell it to.
To sell your place in line?
Well, sell the car, yeah. But I don't really like it.
I'm not going to lie. I really like the way it looks from the outside. Inside, not a huge fan.
Yeah, not a huge fan of the inside. That's why I like the Rivian. The inside of the Rivian's, it's nice.
Oh, thanks for uploading these, man. I forgot to totally upload. We actually had some reviews for tonight's episode, right? Some that are definitely worth sharing. So like I said earlier on the show, please head over and leave us a review, and we'll make sure we read it. All right, this from Fluffy Doughboy. Solid name. Solid
Rune.
No, it says 56. He's 86. You guys killed it again. I love how relatable you guys are. You guys don't sit on your high horses or act all hoity-toity like many finance individuals. I mean, definitely talking to Orun and I here. You, man.
Talk about my black card. You talk about my black card.
You guys talk about these topics as if we are all having some beers and shooting the shit, which is much more relatable. Keep it up.
That is 1,000% the intention and the flavor that we wanted for the show. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for noticing that. We appreciate it. This from Lucas.
Uberfluss.
What is it?
Uberfluss.
Not going to lie. Y'all been speaking the truth. Everywhere else, it's rare rate cut, soft landing BS. Y'all been calling higher for longer, hard landing the whole time. Love the format of regular people tips, like housing, debt, credit, then the Fed stuff at the end. Keep being super moist.
Damn.
Gangster.
Lucas, you complimented Saeed too much.
And last but not least, 5-star review from High Warrior. Only podcast I listen to. So glad I stumbled across this podcast a few months ago. Chris, Saeed, and Orun make these topics palatable and fun. I've always considered myself an extreme novice when it comes to all things finance, and I never really had friends or family to have discussions about it. After listening to the trio for a few months, I feel like I've developed some more confidence in my financial literacy and don't feel like a complete fish out of water. Genuinely love tuning in, love the new format, and hoping for many more years to come.
Ooh. Years, goddamn.
Gangster review.
Arun's just trying to stay employed.
He's just like, dude, I was hoping this shit would die out by now.
I've been watching a Laker game while we were on the show last time.
Was it a Laker game?
No, man.
It was watching some kind of sports clips. I literally heard. I had saved the audio.
You said, I can't believe you didn't share it with me.
I almost did, but I was like, it's late. I don't want to fuck with these guys right now.
Yeah?
I'll fuck with them when they got energy.
When they got energy.
I'll be a disaster again.
Well, thank you for all those reviews. And for listeners out there, please go over and do it again. We appreciate them.
All right, can you stop cupping the mic, man?
No, I gotta cup it.
You've been cupping it so hard all episode long. You're like, oh God, get it in my face, Mark.
I'm just trying to cover your face.
You've got an obsession.
I'm just trying to cover your face because you haven't put my face on here yet.
I'm not going to.
I know you're not. This is your way to pay homage.
Homage
to the original.
Yeah. All right. So,
hour and a half in.
I think we're ready to say it.
Are we?
Yeah.
Are we? You're fired.
You're fired.
Arun, you can't fire a guy who doesn't get paid.
Yeah, exactly. Arun, you got anything?
Nope.
Christopher?
Nope, I'm ready to go.
All right, good night, everybody.
Goodbye.
Can you do that?
I know, I don't know how to do it.